Yep. All right. Father Teresa's wine cellar. Father Teresa, the greatest black atheist. Phoenix Collider, the uppity negress. Reading in the Shade with Phoenix Collider. Check her out on the old Facebooks. And whenever you go to winecellarmedia.com, on the right side panel, you can look and you can see the latest thing that she tweeted on the Twitters. And feel free to retweet it. Right. Also, Fallon Matthew, FallonKitty.com, Lisa Loco, still getting things in order, up and running, this, that, and the other. Alright, fuckers. I told you niggas, it's going to keep happening, right, with Malia Obama and Sasha Obama, I think is the younger individual, coming up next, sooner than soon, alright, Blackwashed in the episode title, Blackwashed plus Malia Obama and the bong picture, Blackwashed, some folks may have heard me say that name, that's Blackwashed, the other podcast, hosted by, 4 colored women, some colored little brown gals. Blackwashed, 4 black women. They critique popular culture and politics, and it's very well read. It's a really smart program. It's kind of a program where I listen to it and I'm like, how the fuck, like, why are they not getting more clicks than me, right? Like, they're fucking smart and they're charismatic, they're really funny folks. Like, it's a dope ass program. And LQ, like, that's the little homie right there. Like, I help LQ with a lot of things. Like sometimes LQ's like, hey, big homie, help me tie my shoe, cuz. And I'm like, oh, I got you, little homie. You know, like, so that's the little homie I help out with whatnot, this, that, and the other. And LQ has actually been on this program with Phoenix Collider, and I jumped in the second hour talking about... It's the episode, if you go back in our archives, it's the reverse brown paper bag test. You know, talking about light skin, dark skin, this, that, and the other. And so check out Blackwash to go to wherever you download podcasts and fucking download it. They don't have that many episodes. Binge listen, all right, to Blackwashed. And over here in the gosh diddly darn wine cellar, Phoenix Collider's not really around that much because our work schedules just don't fucking line up. It's all fucked up as far as that goes. So she'll probably be on like 3, maybe 4 times a week. Maybe. But then also, like, this weekend, like, my other stepson from out in DeKalb County is coming down here, right? So my other stepson will be here for the weekend, and then my domestic stepson, he's just already here, and he's 8 years old, so he needs a lot of attention, right? And what else do we have going on here? Looking at the New York Times, I want to take a little glancy-poo with this New York Times article about young blacks that voice skepticism on Hillary Clinton, and that is worrying Democrats. And George Zimmerman, Big Killer Z, says he is homeless and suffering from PTSD, right? And 25 colored folk, African Americans, well, they done got thrown out of one of them there South Carolina restaurants after a hot woman complained of feeling threatened. Yep, she leaned it. She pulled a Lena. Right, whenever a white woman's getting her racism on, that's called pulling a Lena. All right, she's a Lena to the core. A Lena is a racist Becky. That's what that is, right? And we need your monthly contribution to keep us going and growing, right? Sign up, patreon.com/winecellarmediafund. And you can drop a one-time contribution at paypal.me/phoenixandwilliam. All right. And also, coming down the deal, we have the LGBT news update. We have Glenn Ford talking about Hillary Clinton and Trumpelstiltskin in the areas where they're the same. It is a part one of a series, so we'll be bringing those on the regular. And for the longer break, closer to the end, we have Mumia Abu-Jamal on media shenanigans and the Clinton coup. All right, so obviously this is not some basic black Democrat program. We're a little hardcore in the wine cellar. All right, we're a little hardcore. A little gangster. A little thugged out. All right, so let's go ahead and dance it forward. So, GZ, Killa Z, your main man George Zimmerman. Well, he says that he done became homeless, all right? And he's suffering from PTSD. Now, he told a Spanish language television station that he's now homeless and battling post-traumatic stress disorder and more than $2 million in debt, and he's in fear of his life, which is wicked that the vigilante is worried about vigilantes. What? I don't know. Now, Zimmerman opened up on the Univision television show Aquí y Ahora, Here and Now, that will air Sunday. Ahora. Yeah, okay. Here, that will air on Sunday on the Spanish language station at 7 p.m., which is 2 days past. Now, Zimmerman also discussed his well-known struggle with the 17-year... Struggle is a well-known struggle, all right? His well-known struggle with the 17-year-old Trayvon Martin, an African-American teen who was walking in Zimmerman's neighborhood in Sanford, Florida. Don't walk in my neighborhood, don't you? God damn it, boy. Yo, lank of ass. So little Trey was walking through the neighborhood, and Big GZ flexed and dumped on him when he lost the fight. Right? Now, after he called the cops, it says the two got in a fight. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. No. Zimmerman attacked and Trayvon defended. George Zimmerman says in a Univision interview that he's homeless. And he says Trayvon attacked him and threatened to kill him. Quote, he saw my gun and told me he would kill me. And I knew he was telling the truth. I mean, was not playing. I asked him to stop, and the young man did not care. Continued attacking. I knew he would not stop, even though I knew that someone had seen and police were coming. He did not care. End quote. But he did not answer when he was asked if he should have waited for cops, saying that this case is under Federal Department of Justice investigation. Nah, get the fuck out of here. Now, Zimmerman was acquitted on charges of second-degree murder and manslaughter in a trial back in July in 2013. The ex-neighborhood watchman, said he did not think he initially shot Trayvon Martin, and that it went through the side of his clothes and towards a neighbor's house. Okay. Now, Tama Tilleman, who's 4 years old, came armed with a bag of Skittles at the march protesting police handling of Trayvon Martin. And after the bullet was fired and the fight with Martin stopped immediately, said, well, yeah, nigga, you killed him. Asked if he still thought he had done the right thing, he says, quote, in my mind and between God and me, I know that if I did not act the way I acted, I would not be here. Therefore, God says my life matters. White, Hispanic, Jew lives matter. Jew. Yeah, Zimmerman's a Jew. I don't know if you knew that. His name is Zimmerman. Jesus Christ. Okay. He insisted his life was in danger. Quote, "When you hit your head repeatedly against the concrete and have broken nose and eye full of blood and tires, you're not in a position to do much." Oh, yeah, like aim accurately. Eyes full of blood and tears, but you were able to get the gun out, cock it, aim and blast. Okay, eyes full of blood and tears. My ass! You a lying motherfucker, George. So he was acquitted of the murder charges back in that July 2013, and he had raised $350,000 online himself and a bunch of Klans folk and whatnot. Normal white people, they tried to give him some of their money dollars. They were like, "Here, George, you want it?" And he was like, "I don't know." All right, now of those donors, he says, "What the fuck?" She says, "Those people I owe my freedom, because without them, we could not have the experts we had." Oh, that's what it is. Or maybe State Prosecutor Angela Corey deliberately threw the case because she's white supremacist. That's what I think. Because it's true. Now, recently, he had planned to take part in a celebrity boxing match with the rapper DMX, but the promoter announced last week it was canceled, and he is not working with the. He is not working and lost his health insurance. So fuck what, nigga? And since the trial, he has been in the news for a variety of other matters. That's why I have that post up. It's like, if he gets arrested a few more times, we can make a George Zimmerman calendar. He needs 12 mugshots. Yeah. Alright, I don't care if shits is low quality or anything. Like, give me those fucking shots. Alright. Let's go ahead and move things along. And dance it on over to Black Agenda with Glenn Ford and Bruce Dixon and Nellie Bailey and all those folks over there. And hear about this first installment of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, not versus.
The news is a shit show these days, and we're here to give you a break from the white supremacist media bullshit by bringing you the shitty news so that you can feel less like shit, because you know the people discussing all the fucked up shit give a shit about you and the shitty situations you deal with every day. So shit. Pour yourself a glass and settle in for Father Teresa's Wine Cellar.
Hey yo, thanks just ain't the same for hustlers. But Kane don't budge, I remain with clusters. Rain and thunder with pains above you. With your brain on drugs like I flamed and puffed you. I came to rearrange the structure. No criminal, no gangster thugster. Flow cynical, so vain and vicious. Cold winter flow, no games enlisted. This is my eviction list. Evilistic slid and I shifted clicks. And I give you the biz if you're interested. Nothing to hide but back tax, I'm hitting licks. Don't know if I'm mathematic or intricate. Don't know if you're asthmatic, so hit the split. Don't know if you've seen or you witnessed it. Don't know if I'm mean or I'm just a dick. Guess what, little chump, I'm just a prick. I'm just living proof that when Christmas hits, there is no Santa Claus with a list of gifts.
For the two capitalist parties this election year, nothing is more important than controlling the public conversation. Republicans want you to know that Hillary is a liar and a crook. Democrats need to keep reminding you that Trump is an unrepentant racist and con man. What neither party or candidate and none of the corporate media news outlets talk about are the places where Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are on the same page. The issues upon which the entire 1%er U.S. political establishment is of a single mind. So for the next couple of weeks here at Black Agenda Report, we will be talking about where Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump agree. The first and most obvious point of agreement in the U.S. political establishment, not just between Hillary and Trump, but between all the corporate media news outlets, and from the down-ticket hacks and flacks on the Republican side to the Congressional Black Caucus and so-called Progressive Caucus, there is nearly unanimous and unflinching support for the apartheid state of Israel. From the moment of its founding in 1948, Israel has been a vicious colonial settler state, a savage ethnocracy bent upon the violent expulsion and dispossession of all the land's non-Jewish inhabitants. To maintain its high-tech, well-armed white military outpost in that sea of brown people next to a large fraction of the planet's most easily accessible oil, the U.S. has made itself Israel's armorer, financier, and diplomatic sugar daddy, an arrangement condoned by the leaders of both imperialist parties. Both Trump and Hillary showed up at AIPAC's annual meeting in March. Trump declared Israel a strategic ally and the only democracy in the Middle East. Hillary doubled down and denounced the nonviolent global movement to boycott, divest from, and sanction the apartheid regime as alarming, equating it to anti-Semitism. And it's not just the one percenter presidential candidates. Republicans from John Kasich and John McCain and Democrats from Rahm Emanuel to the Congressional Black Caucus are solid, nearly unanimous backers of rearming, refinancing, and diplomatically reinforcing the apartheid state. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, a Democrat, championed and signed into law a 2016 bill banning individuals and corporations identified as supporting the BDS movement from contracting with the state of New York, and provided for a state-run blacklist of BDS supporters, much like the old Mississippi State Sovereignty Commission, which furnished information about local freedom movement activists of the 1950s and 60s to vigilantes who harassed them economically and sometimes murdered them. Outside the U.S., Israel's pedigree as an apartheid state is almost universally recognized. But the only U.S. presidential candidate to utter the words Israel and apartheid in the same sentence has been the Green Party's Jill Stein, whom Democrats and Republicans alike desperately want to ban from televised debates, lest she expose not the difference between the two corporate parties, but the distance between them and the American people. For Black Agenda Report, I'm Bruce Dixon. Find us on the web at www.blackagendareport.com.
Father Teresa is my atheist, communist, socialist, liberal, asshole, racist, feminine-hating, d-hole uncle.
Alright. Father Teresa's wine cellar. Wait, hold on. Wait a second. Father Teresa's wine cellar? No. No, it is not Father Teresa's wine cellar anymore. And I've been getting away from that, right? Like, when I started this whole thing back in 2012, I was like, this will be a fun name, right? It'll be a fun atheist program. We'll talk shit. We mostly, you know, like, covered stories like, look at these fucking Christian guys over here. Look at these Muslim guys over here. They're not logical like the atheist over here. You know, they're like, that shit gets boring. You know, so I just, like, went more towards, like, news and comment and commentary. I mean, could I even call it social justice commentary? I think it's just black nigga commentary talking that shit, right? It's just a black nigga talking that shit. So as we move forward, like, the Father Teresa came off of more things. Like, when we, like, well, a blog page, like, call it social dissonance, right? When we finally made a website, it was like Wine Cellar Media. Like, I was leaning towards Wine Cellar Entertainment. Like, even though it's like some of the old links have Wine Cellar. Like, if you look at some of the old episodes, like, links to our other content would have entertainment in them. And I finally landed on Wine Cellar Media. And that's why it's winecellarmedia.com. The Patreon is Wine Cellar Media Fund. Go to soundcloud.com, Wine Cellar Media. You know. So, and we're changing all the things to that. And, like, now, it is still the same RSS feed, so you don't have to resubscribe or anything. But, like, now, if you look, like, if you get it through iTunes or whatever application you go through, if you look at the name now, it's Wine Cellar Media with Phoenix Kaliter and William J. Jackson. You know, as we should do. Like, we should keep punching it forward. All right. And taking a look in the comment area, the homie Pam Loco, Pam Hard. Pam goes hard in the motherfucking paint, nigga. The homie Pam Loco left a comment in the space, a short comment, said, Malia needs to ditch these basic friends of hers. Yep, gotta stop hanging around white supremacists, man. So, this is, I mean, it's one of those, it's like, it's the hot story, you know, while to me it's the ongoing white supremacy and misogynoir. So, this is on some folks, aceshowbiz.com. And their headline, Malia Obama pictured with a bong while wearing a Smoking Kills t-shirt. Right? And it says, the 18-year-old first daughter was seen with drug paraphernalia just a month after she was reported getting scolded by her president dad, Barack Obama, for smoking weed. Malia Obama's summer has been pretty wild. A few weeks after she was spotted smoking what appeared to be weed at Lollapalooza, the 18-year-old, no black person should go to anything with that name. The 18-year-old first daughter was caught on camera sitting real close to a bong. The photo taken at what looked like a house party in Philadelphia, Malia was surrounded by some male friends with a... No, these are not male friends. These are white rapists. So she was surrounded by some white rapists, and, while the bong sat on the table in front of her. However, it is unclear whether or not she took a hit. Ugh. This is... Alright, took a hit. Why don't they just say took a toke? I mean, might as well just go for... Why don't they just say, oh, is the first colored gal daughter to take smoking on that chronic? Is she on that Dr. Dre? Is she on that Dre Day? Is it nothing but a G thing? Baby, little nigger gal's going crazy. Tell you what. Interestingly, it says, they continue, Malia was seen with the drug paraphernalia while she was wearing a white t-shirt with the words Smoking Kills printed on it. She teamed the top with a pair of denim shorts and a purple baseball cap. many social media users have responded to the bong photo, and a lot of them are defending Malia. I mean, she doesn't really... fuck, I don't know, man. Like, I think there's nothing you could do. Like, white supremacy is very set on these kids, and they're after them. Alright, so they're defending Malia. If Malia Obama wants to take a hit of a gigantic bong, let her, because she's still a good person on her way to doing good things, end quote. And said one commenter. Another commenter said, if Malia Obama wants to smoke a bong, she should be able to smoke a bong in peace. SMH, end quote. The SMH, that stands for shaking my head. It's this whole internet thing, how these kids talk. Continuing, while some people don't seem to have a problem with Malia doing drugs, her dad Barack Obama reportedly does. Radar Online claimed that the POTUS was furious at his daughter after she was photographed smoking pot last month. You know, that's image shit. Because Barry Hussein still has the politician, and he's got that whole fucking, basically a black Republican in a blue tie thing. Like, he's a conservative to the core. He's blue dog as a motherfucker, right? So he's all about that respectability politics shit. Don't get caught up doing that. Don't get caught up, nigga. Alright, quote, this is the president's worst nightmare, an unnamed source said. So fuck that unnamed source. They continue, the end of his term is in sight, and the carefully crafted image of a world-beating family is unraveling right before his eyes. Yep. Because now it gives them the best excuse they could possibly have to just be like, I told you that was just another pack of niggers, as Mel Gibson would say. it's another pack of niggers. Yeah, man. Have y'all heard that Mel Gibson clip? That shit's bugged out, man. Because, yeah, and it's got the rape, you know, the rape culture factor to it. Because, yeah, he was on the telephone and he was like, and he told that person he was talking to, he said, I don't care if you get raped by a pack of niggers. Like, dude, what the fuck? Like, Mel tripping, because, like, that nigga needs to get a brave heart and see the signs. Maybe he was just, he was feeling the passion. The passion of what? Nigga, you know what. All right. So, this shit's not going to get better. This shit is going to get worse. I mean, more people are going to be sneaking shit. And I guarantee you, like, fucking, like, what people call revenge porn, which, yeah, right, like that, I mean, I get it, like, that's the name folks have ended up with, and that's what the vernacular is, but I don't see any revenge in it. My first video I put up, I was like, that's a first strike, that's an attack, right, like that, there's nothing that they're getting revenge for, there's nothing, they were not harmed, but that's what's gonna happen, is the next up is a hidden camera sex tape, Garon goddamn to you. I guarantee you. Maybe even hidden camera rape tape. I guarantee you. You hear me saying this shit? Do not forget that. Because I told you this shit. Well, I didn't tell you. In 2008. And I wasn't even using the Facebooks then. But back in 2008 on the old hip hop website, I was like, those two little girls are in trouble. Oh, oh, they are in for it. And they are. And fucking rapist white men and dangerous white women are fucking coming for them. They want to tear them down and put them back in their place. No more so-called perfect first negra family. All right. Now let's go ahead and get into an LGBT news update. You can tell me what the fuck you think about this shit at Tired William at Tired William at yahoo.com. Who the fuck emails? Hit me up on Facebook, nigga. William J. Jackson. Fuck. Like, stop. Don't fucking email me. I'm not gonna fucking respond. All right. Let's go. LGBT news update next.
I got caught out in the rain.
I hope you're sure happy it's Tuesday in the wine cellar. Baby, why are you trying to give me a glass? Just give me that bottle.
It's been about a year since we last spoke, and every day I thought about you, thought you ought to know. What do I do with this fire inside of me? Always been you, baby, I'm desiring. I know you know good for me, and I know you like a drug, it's killing me, but I don't.
It's now time for Big Gay News, brought to you by Lavender Media. This is Shane Luke in Minneapolis, and here are your headlines for Monday, September 5th, 2016. First up, Big Gay News from New Jersey. Gay priest suspended for supporting fired high school dean. NJ.com reports a North Jersey priest who is gay has been suspended by the Newark Archbishop after expressing support for a woman who was fired for being in a same-sex marriage. The Reverend Warren Hall, who was working at a Hoboken church, said he was being suspended for taking stands in favor of gay support groups and, specifically, for expressing support for a former dean of guidance and basketball coach. Hall says he will no longer be able to celebrate Mass in public, present himself as a priest, or work in the New Jersey parishes where he has been ministering. Last year, Hall was fired from his post as director of Seton Hall Campus Ministry because of a pro-LGBT Facebook post he made. After the Seton Hall firing, Hall came out as gay. Next up, celebs appear in new all-star version of Black Eyed Peas' Where's the Love? Attitude reports the Black Eyed Peas released a brand new version of their 2003 smash hit, Where's the Love? The track has been given a new sound, with a sample of Toto's Africa and a children's choir, and was produced in response to the string of tragedies and terrorist attacks that have struck the world this year. In a video message, frontman will.i.am explained what led him to bring the song back, with a little help from Jessie J, Mary J. Blige, Justin Timberlake, and more. He cited Paris, Belgium, Turkey, Orlando, among others, before saying, quote, I hope this song inspires the millennial to go all out. Scream from the tallest mountain. Care like your freedom depends on it. Pay attention like that is at risk. Next up, K. gay buff barber loses it on jet, tries to open plane door mid-flight. New Now Next reports Jordan Fragicomo, a barber in Hell's Kitchen, created a scene during a flight from New York to Seattle when he tried to open the emergency exit door while the plane was in mid-flight. Fragicomo had to be restrained by the flight crew and was babbling incoherently and attempting to kiss two flight attendants. Fragicomo admitted to authorities that he had ingested GHB, cocaine, and Xanax 3 hours before taking off. The jet was forced to make an emergency landing at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. An Alaska Airlines spokeswoman said that he attempted to access one of the doors in the rear of the aircraft and was removed by law enforcement upon the plane's landing. She noted that it is impossible to open the emergency door while the cabin is pressurized and the plane is in flight. For our last story, Mike Pence wrote an article urging employers not to hire gay people. Out magazine reports Mike Pence, Donald Trump's running mate in this year's presidential election, published articles urging employers not to hire gay employees while he was head of the Indiana Policy Review in the 1990s. One such article published during Pence's tenure reads, quote, "Homosexuals are not as a group able-bodied. They are known to carry extremely high rates of disease brought on because of the nature of their sexual practices and the promiscuity which is a hallmark of their lifestyle." Pence also argues in the piece that homosexuality is a pathological condition. Pence has also fallen under scrutiny for publishing work in 1993 criticizing gay military members. Last year, as governor of Indiana, he signed the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which allows companies to discriminate against LGBT employees and customers based on firmly held religious beliefs. And he's proposed cutting funding for HIV treatment and using the money for gay cure therapy. That's it for today. I'm Shane Luke in Minneapolis. Join us and tweet your take on today's stories on Twitter at the handle Big Gay News.
This live broadcast and archive chat room is being hosted by the good folks at Americans United Again.
All right, Wine Cellar Media with Phoenix and Phoenix Kalita and William J. Jackson. I gotta say the name right. I can't say Father Teresa's Wine Cellar anymore. Yes, I fucking can. I don't know. All right, what do we got going on over here? All right, so it's not just Lena Dunham and Amy Schumer, right? Like, this is kind of just normal for white woman ladies, right? So let's dance it on over here.
Oh yeah.
Ooh, excuse me. Out into the Carolinas. All right. So there's a feller out there in South Carolina. Him a black man. He about blacker than the dark. I tell you what. And this South Carolina black colored Negro dark man and several of his friends said they were refused service at the Wild Wing Cafe in Charleston last month, and they were asked to leave. The reason, well, ironically named Michael Brown, that's actually his name, Michael Brown, and his group of 24 friends and family members, which were all African colored folk, and another customer, who's a white woman, well, she complained that she felt threatened by them. She was like, "Well, look at all them colors. I'm a white woman. Get them out of here." And, well, that works. If you're a white woman, you can do that whenever you want. And Brown, Michael Brown, ironically named, was celebrating his cousin's last day in Charleston. And with a night out at the Wild Wing Cafe, well, he was like, "Well, that there ain't right that they did that to me." So he went to social media, and the story went viral. And the apparent race-based snub. Oh, apparent. Oh. Yeah. The straight up and down, very obvious racism practiced by a white woman on colored folk came after Michael Brown, ironically named, and his group waited for a table for 120 minutes. Some folks might call that 2 hours. I call it 120 minutes. Michael Brown, ironically named, he got ignored by folks, and he said the, but well, he got ignored when he hit up the restaurant's corporate office multiple times to tell them about the incident, and so he gave up. That's when he went to social media, and he said, "She said there's a situation where one of our customers feels threatened by your party, so she asked us not to seat you in our section," which totally alarmed all of us because we're sitting there peaceably for 2 hours. Nigga, no you wasn't. You was sitting there blackedly for 2 hours, and blackedly ain't nothing peaceful about that to that white woman. That there is aggressified. You was aggressing on her by minding your own business. Now, keep focused. He said, obviously, if we were causing any conflict, we would have been ejected out of the place hours before. But as Mr. Michael Brown, ironically named, and the shift manager were talking, a member of his party began videotaping the conversation, which is when the manager became upset and refused to seat the group. Oh, nigga, you didn't want to get your racism documented, nigga? Said, I asked her, I want to be clear with you, Mr. Michael Brown, ironically named, told the station. I said, so you're telling me I have to leave? She said, I have a right to deny you service. I said, you're asking me to leave because you're upset because he was recording you after we've waited 120 minutes. And after you've already pretty much discriminated on us. And she answered, yes, you nigger. Get the fuck out of here. And so, the post that he made on the Facebooks, he said... Okay. I just heard a whole bunch of horn honking out there. And there's like warehouses and big trucks out there. I wonder if one of them big ass trucks just crashed. I want to go out and see so bad. Alright, but I have to work. So let's finish working. Let's do this shift. So we put a post up on the Facebooks. Oh, now I hear sirens. What the fuck is going on out there? Oh my goodness, I'm so nosy. Alright, so he put a post on the Facebooks. He said, I will never go to Wild Wings Cafe in Charleston again! Exclamation point. In parentheses, party of 25, family and friends. Waited 2 hours patiently and were refused service because another customer, white, felt threatened by us. This type of racial discrimination is unspace acceptable. That's all right. We'll let run with it. And we have to put a stop to it. The manager looked me dead in the face, and she said she was refusing us service because she had a right to, and simply she felt like it. Do not support this establishment. Please share this post. We need your help. And, motherfucker shared the post, nigga. The post got shared. So after Brown posted this on the restaurant's Facebook page, he got a call from, oh, the corporate office called him. Oh, nigga might put a dent in them pockets. I say nobody, fuck boycott, boy quit. Okay, don't boycott, boy quit. Just never go back. Never go back, ever. Matter of fact, black people should go in, sit down, order, wait a while so you know they're cooking your shit, then get up and walk the fuck out. Fuck you. Peace. Don't boycott, boy quit. Alright, not satisfied, Michael Brown, ironically named, says the restaurant's offer of a free meal isn't enough. Nigga, we don't want no motherfucking nigga, don't. They're trying to soup kitchen you. Fuck you. Boy, quit. Michael Brown, ironically named, called the restaurant's corporate headquarters reportedly to explain what had happened to the manager's superiors, but nobody ever called him back, and that's when he hit up the Facebooks. All right. These fucking articles get fucking weird, right? And so, and this is what the folks from the corporate office said. They said, we got alerted through social media, so we always encourage our customers to respond to us or to comment on our social media pages, said Deborah Stokes. Deborah Stokes is the corporate version of Becky, right? Lena is racist Becky. Deborah is corporate Becky. Hillary is imperialist warmongering Becky. The chief marketing officer of the Wildman Cafe is Deborah Stokes. And after the post, representatives for the Wild Wing Cafe said they immediately responded and spoke to Michael Brown, ironically named. They said, we had a conversation. It was a really good conversation. He and many of his family and friends were there about a month ago. They are regular customers of ours. So they were having a going away party. And they just didn't receive the experience that they have come to know and love. At no point did corporate Becky deny that Michael Brown, ironically named, story was true. The restaurant offered Michael Brown, ironically named, and his family a free meal for the entire group. But Michael Brown ain't completely satisfied with that deal. So, we weren't coming there for a free meal. We came there that night. We were coming to patronize the business. This is not a situation where you can just give us a free meal and everything's okay, because it's deeper than that, he said. As of Sunday night, Brown's post was shared on the Facebooks nearly 3,000 times. Because him a black man. And I say again, don't boycott, boyquit, nigga, just never go back again. Like, now's the time, strike while it's hot. I mean, if you know what black BISness is out there that's already up and running that sells similar products, I mean, black people can cook chicken too, nigga. You don't have to, you ain't got to eat the white man's chicken. Nigga, but yeah, nigga, man, black people can make a motherfucking chicken wing full. So, find the local black spot. Iron's hot. Nigga, strike and tell everybody, yo, go hit up this spot. Tell everybody, share this spot. You know, link people to it in social media. Tell that spot, if they don't have social media, tell them, get it now. Because Michael Brown, ironically named, is going to blow up the spot. And tell them to hit up Wine Cellar Media. We will help. We have a wee bit of a following throughout the social media platforms. Alright? Shit, man. Get a fucking 1,000 hits on the website alone a day. And that's not even social media. That's the website. Cool. Alright? So, fucking hit it up. Make it crack. And tell everybody, yo, that, Wacky Wacky Wild Wings, whoever the fuck they are, don't boycott. Boyquit. Everybody get the flunk out of there. Alright, now we're going to go ahead and kick it with Mumia Abu-Jamal for a little while, and then we'll come back, do one more story, take a look, and we'll take a look at the front end of a New York Times article, and then we'll go ahead and wrap this episode up, and then shit, man, my stepson will be on the way home soon, so I want to be done broadcasting before he gets back, so he don't have to hear me motherfucking cussing in the house and shit. I don't want him to hear that. Seems tacky.
Father Teresa's Wine Cellar is rated R for keeping it real.
Managers of mayhem. The American news media, tired of performing its usual duty, you know, telling the news, has launched a new form, reporting rumors and launching interminable discussions. Instead of the usual media icon of a talking head, They brought in talking heads, more mouths to discuss more and more nonsense. But that's not all. Their other new gig, micromanaging political campaigns. When's the last time you heard questions like, well, what does candidate A have to do to please X constituency? I mean, what? Whatever happened to this happened, or that happened, or this is why that happened? News has become endless discussion over minutiae. Reports on people's feelings, or the latest gadget that you just must have now, or Hollywood gossip, or what the prince or princess or duke of England is wearing. It is mindless and mind-bending. And every day, every hour, there's breaking news. How about just news? It is painful for me to watch or listen to news these days. Too much razzle-dazzle, not enough news. This is a nation of over 310 million people. There's more than enough stories to tell. Just tell them. There are some 7 billion people in the world today. That's more than enough stories to tell. There are over 2 million prisoners in America. That's more than enough stories to tell. Let's tell them.
Outside of my window, the view that I see is a child and mama, and the child is begging for money. Tell me why the woman is blind. Is she so broke? The kid's stealing crime in such a beautiful city, but the world is burning it down.
The Clinton crew. One can hardly recall the Clinton years without becoming awash in a wave of exhaustion. For despite the rosy cast granted by the passage of time, it was in fact a time of immense loss, of constant worry, and social transformation, the effects of which are only dimly being perceived today. We must look at the era critically to see what was actually there, not to toss bouquets and incense over what was not, for in doing so, we can learn a bitter, unmistakable truth. Not all social transformation is a change for the better. And when it came to the Clinton era, the political ascendancy of William Jefferson Clinton, Esquire, there was, to be sure, change, but hardly change for the better. And this was not by mistake. It was by design. President Clinton ushered in the biggest change in habeas corpus since the Lincoln era, when in the throes of civil war, the president suspended habeas corpus for those who aided and abetted the Southern Confederacy. Lincoln was rebuffed by the court, which held in the Milligan case that when the courts are open, the executive could not dispense with a writ. As we shall see, Clinton was far more subversive. In the wake of the bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma, Clinton pushed through what came to be called AEDPA, for the Anti-Terrorism Effective Death Penalty Act. It was hailed as a tool against terrorism and flew into law as the embers of Oklahoma were still warm. As with any law, it didn't end with terrorism, but became a tool used in everyday non-terrorism-related cases, and especially in death penalty cases. It did what no habeas corpus law had ever done in the nearly 700 years since its British origins. It exalted the findings of an inferior court, by that I mean a lower court, over that of an appellate or higher, in the American sense, federal court. The higher tribunal, composed of life-tenured judges nominated by the president and approved by a U.S. Senate majority and made by the Constitution, were to defer to the reasoning of local, state, and elected judges who often serve terms like any other politician. By this act, which on its face violates the letter and spirit of the Constitution, Clinton exalted the political over the judicial, to the detriment and ultimate destruction of the historical and practical essence of the writ of habeas corpus, what legal scholars have called for over a century the Great Writ. Today, habeas corpus is an obstacle course, one beset with trapdoors and swinging axes, the result of which has fed the dreaded prison industrial complex by making it harder than ever to prove and prevail when a constitutional violation is made. We can't assume that Mr. Clinton didn't know what was going on, for Clinton was a law professor. He crafted a tool of mass repression that flipped habeas corpus on its head. This was politics, masked as law, to grant the state the power to close the door of the Great Writ and allow more convictions and longer prison terms and expand state power. Have you ever heard any politician say they would repeal AEDPA? Don't hold your breath. Clinton, the author of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, which was later declared unconstitutional, was also the author and signatory to AEDPA, which is just as unconstitutional. In the Constitution, Article 6, is written, "The Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, shall be the supreme law of the land." Clinton elevated elected state judges, and by so doing, violated the oath he took as a lawyer and as president of the United States. He left immense suffering as his legacy and gave rise to the Prison House of Nations. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
This live broadcast and archive chat room is being hosted by Roshani of the Single Simulcast.
Father Teresa won't let me have a kitten.
You already got a fucking dog.
It's a puppy.
It stinks!
Y'all motherfuckers can eat a bag of dicks.
Alright. WineCellarMedia.com. Phoenix Kalita, William J. Jackson, Lisa Loco, Fallon Matthew of FallonKitty.com. She's black. Fallon Matthew is she's a colored woman. She does colored woman things. She is a very Negro-centric, if you will. And she wears sunglasses like she's in the 70s. Yeah, where should be finding, like, I think she'd just be in the attic just snatching clothes. I mean, it shit's fly, though. Niggas is looking fresh. Alright. Back to WineCellarMedia.com, where you can check out stories like the 25 colored folk throwing out the restaurant because the hot woman, Zimmerman homeless, James Blair's a good cop, little girls shot dead by a man in Texas, Get Pretty, shared by William J. Jackson. Hey, that's me. And what is this? What is this? Again, it's not just Leaner Dunham. Alright, this is White Woman Normal. So, and we're coming from the updates down to the original story, right? So, the University of Mizzou has issued a statement. Wait, let me check my... Okay, good. It's going. All right. So, the University of Mizzou has issued a statement in response to Thursday night's initial MU alert notification that included little information. Quote, "Last night, initial emergency text alerts sent by the University of Missouri Police Department did not include the location of the incident," end quote, from Gary Ward, who's the vice chancellor for operations. They need a vice chancellor. All right, fuck it. Quote, "We apologize. This omission was due to human error, and we take full responsibility. We have identified the cause for the error, and it has been corrected. We will meet today, and those involved with sending alert messages will review the process in an endeavor to prevent recurrence of this error in future emergency alerts. Safety is number one on our campus." Now let's go back to the original story. The University of Missouri Police Department is investigating a robbery on campus Thursday night. According to the MU Alert website, a delivery driver reported a suspect flashed a gun near Walpers Hall and demanded money. The university notified students, faculty, and staff to investigate just after 8:30 p.m., but did not initially say where the robbery occurred. This comes after continued criticism over the alert system. You can find updates from MU Alert by clicking on a link that is inside where the winecellarmedia.com has this story. Now, and then an update came after it. The suspect is described as a black man, 6 feet tall, some facial hair, with a possible goatee, upper arm tattoo, in his late 20s, with a handgun. So the police came out with the motherfucking K-9 unit, and they're investigating the situation. And then an update came after that. And it said the Columbia police have left the scene of Thursday night's robbery near Walpers Hall. Investigators say they will continue to search for the suspect and found no threat on campus. If you have any information about the robbery, you are asked to call 573-882-7201. We should call them and be like, nigga, I got some information on it. White women lie. MUPD has arrested a woman. After she claimed she was, this is the next update. MUPD has arrested a woman after she claimed she was robbed on campus, but apparently was not Thursday night. At around 8:30 p.m., MUPD says it got a report from Courtney Chancellor claiming she was robbed as she attempted to deliver food near Walpers Hall on Mizzou campus. MUPD said they used evidence from surveillance cameras and interviewed a chancellor who was not a student at Mizzou. Police said she confessed to falsely claiming the robbery. Police arrested her on suspicion of filing a false report. Do you know what that's like? Every day you step out the motherfucking door as a black man, you don't know if there's an investigation and cops are out with dogs looking for a false description of you that a white woman filed. At any point, you could be getting bit in the motherfucking ass by a German Shepherd or getting shot in the face, chest, back, and neck. Yo neck, yo back, cuz nigga, you are black. All right? Like, you can get it fucking with these white women. Don't trust. And if you're a white woman listening to this, hey, nigga, fuck you offended for? You safe, nigga. I'm the one that might get bit in the ass. You aight. You good. You good. A white man might call you the C word. Oh. Oh. Somebody might not watch Ghostbusters with you. Oh. Oh. White woman problems. The pumpkin spice bagels aren't on the shelf yet. That's actually not a white woman problem. That's my problem. That's me projecting my problem onto you. The pumpkin spice bagels need to get on the motherfucking shelf. Shit's bullshit. I'm tired of waiting. Alright. Democrats. Fuck them. So this is coming off the New York Times by Brittany Packnett. All right. or not Brittany Packnett. Brittany Packnett's an activist. Whitney Curtis is Whitney Curtis and Jonathan Martin got this article together for the New York Times. All right. And they put it young blacks. So we're not going to go through this whole thing. It's long as shit. Young black colored folk. Voice skepticism on Hillary Clinton and its worrying Democrats, right? So Brittany Packnett, a 31-year-old St. Louis-based activist, said that young black voters wanted more than a candidate who was better than the alternative.
Fuck yeah.
Washington. when a handful of a liberal advocacy organizations convened a series of focus groups with young black voters last month, the assessments of Donald J. Trump were predictably unsparing, but when the participants asked about Hillary Clinton, their appraisals were just as blunt and nearly as biting. Quote, "What am I supposed to do if I don't like him and I don't trust her?" Which was a question from a millennial black woman in Ohio. Quote, "Choose between being stabbed and being shot? No way." Continuing another quote, "She was part of the whole problem that started sending blacks to jail," end quote, said a young black man, also from Ohio, about Mrs. Clinton. Here's a quote. "He's a racist and she's a liar." She's also racist. So really, what's the difference in choosing both or choosing neither? He's a racist and she's a liar. So why choose both? Just choose neither. Another black woman from Ohio said. Now, let's see. So, results from the Obama voter focus groups on Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton's difficulties with young coloreds were laid bare in four damning focus groups conducted for a handful of progressive organizations. The results were outlined in a presentation, a Democratic pollster, and shared with the Times by another party strategist who wanted to draw attention to Mrs. Clinton's difficulties in hopes that the campaign would move more aggressively to address the matter. They don't have to, and that's why they're not going to, because people are down with the lesser of two evils. All right, we're going to run our mouths about this, but get ready for Clindo. All right, she's going to break the glass ceiling. And it's going to be great for all women. Yes, all women will be helped by Hillary Clinton's glass ceiling. And yes, all colored people, because we all know when white women get something, everybody gets something. It's always great for everybody when a white woman lucks out, you know, or just steals and deals. And comes by on the motherfucking wheels. All right, let's get back to this shit. All right, so young African McColoreds, like all voters their age, are typically far harder to drive to the polls than middle-aged and older Americans. Yes, that is because most of Generation X gave up. Most of Generation X is a bunch of yuppie-ass motherfucking sellouts. All right, that's just the reality. But most of Generation X is a bunch of little mark-ass busters that gave the fuck up. That just, sellout isn't even a thing to them anymore. It's like, the word sellout holds no weight. The word hater does. So you're just a hater, more so than they're a sellout. That's how things are now with most of Generation X. So yeah, they're gonna go vote Clindo, because they're like, hey, lesser of two evils is pretty good. I got a flat screen TV and a Honda Civic or what do they got them? Nissan. I got a Nissan and a flat screen TV and the picture in picture, so I'm all right. You know, like Patton Oswalt. Patton Oswalt's a buster ass. Fucking, you know, he's a fucking chump. Buster ass. The Gen Xer. All right. So continuing forward. Their skepticism is rooted in deep discomfort with the political establishment that they believe the 68-year-old former First Lady and Secretary of State represents. They share a lingering mistrust of Mrs. Clinton and her husband over criminal justice issues. They're demanding more from politics. See, hold up. Let's skim through this shit, because I want to see if they say anything about the intercontinental white supremacy. So in this article, they go, the conversation with young black voters are having is no longer one about settling on a candidate. Fuck that. They say Donald Trump's name again. They say Obama's name again. They talk about a 25-page presentation by Cornell Belcher. And then they bring out Chris Prudhomme. Who's the president of Vote America Now. Fuck you, Prudhomme. And they say they're adding to the worries that African Americans that Mr. Belcher conducted earlier this summer, indicating that Clinton is lagging well behind Obama's performance. In Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, 70% of African Americans under 35 say they were backing Mrs. Clinton, 8% indicated support for Mr. Trump, 18% said they were backing another candidate or did not know whom they would support Back in 2012, Barry Hussein got 92%. Wasn't that wasn't that 98.2%? They might want to check their numbers on that. Right, I'm still seeing nothing about Hillary Clinton's intercontinental white supremacy. Nothing about Haiti, nothing about Jamaica, nothing about Libya. What's happening? Some else they say, what frustrates many blacks under 40 is Mrs. Clinton's overriding focus on Mr. Trump. Yeah, well, that's because that is representative of the game now. The Democrats, their campaign is basically... But look at the Republicans. They're scary, right? Aren't you scared of the Republicans? They're like, they're racist or something. Eh, fuck you. Quote, we already know what the deal is with Trump, said Nathan Barksville, a 35-year-old North Carolina state representative. Quote, tell us what your plan is to make our lives better. And Clinton ain't got shit for that. And continuing through... Yeah, there's literally this whole article. Excuse me, says nothing about how Hillary Clinton is an intercontinental white supremacist. Excuse me. See, and I'm telling you, like, and folks who don't listen to the podcast don't know this because I don't post it in social media because most of the people on social media that don't tune into the program, they're just, they lack the maturity for such a conversation. You know, like they're all faux outrage and fake emotion. Like these people are full of shit. They're all fakesters, like a motherfucker. So in 1992, my biological mother, Charlotte Sharon Washington at the time, born Charlotte Sharon Alston, she saw Bill Clinton and she saw George Bush and she saw that all the Democrats were saying was, but look at how much we love you niggers. I'm gonna kiss this nigger baby. Look at me playing saxophone for you, nigger. Don't you like that? Just like how Hillary Clinton was like, well, look, I could buck dance like you. I'm doing your Dougie or whatever the fuck she did on the racist Ellen DeGeneres show. Ellen DeGeneres is a racist. And she, you know, Bill Clinton did the same shit. My biological mother, who, she was born in 1958. She was 30 in 88. Yeah, so, I mean, she was under 35, you know, and I'm under 35. I'm around the same age that she was. And she saw that, and she saw Bush, and she was like, fuck Bush, you know, because, you know, she knew about Bush from, you know, the fucking 80s. Like, he's been in the game. Like, the Bushes have been a name in politics since before all of us were born, you know. And she looked at those two, and then she looked at the weird guy, this Ross Perot cat, who was like, they gotta do this with the tariffs. You know? And she was like, okay, going Ross Perot. And so really, you look back, she was the Bernie or bust of her day. She's like, fuck the two majors. And the main reason why a bunch of people still stick with the majors is because they're scared that the third party can't take it. Or that the third choice can't take it. Fuck third party, third choice. Right? Like, these motherfuckers are so caught up in, protein and starch. Protein and starch. A protein and a starch. A protein and a starch. And it's like, hey, let's get some vegetables in this motherfucker, man. Can we get some fruit? Can we get some vegetables? Can we get a cup of orange juice? You know, let's get some better shit. And so, just like my biological mother, at this shit, if Jill Stein gets on the ticket in Illinois, I'm going Stein. I'm going to do the Ross Perot vote of my generation. And if it's not Stein, if Stein doesn't get on the ticket in Illinois in November, then I'll just fucking write in Bernie Sanders. Yeah, because not doing no Trump, not doing no Clinton. Fuck both of them. They both ain't shit. So, I'm just going to follow in the footsteps of my biological mother because... I'm a nice young man and I do what my mother tells me to do because my black mother has my black best interest in mind with her actions. WineCellarMedia.com, Patreon.com/WineCellarMediaFund, PayPal.me/PhoenixAndWilliam. We need you, and we hope that you want us. Thanks for hanging out. Have a good one.